You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 213 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. Seth hosting today, and I'm joined by Jason Rabinowitz, which means I must have been at a trade show recently.
Either AIX or APEX. Which one is it this time?
We were at the APEX Expo in Boston, Massachusetts last week, and a lot of interesting stuff happened there. Let's dive right into the expo. We'll get to some of the other stories that happened this week in a little bit too, but there were some interesting developments, I would say. You know, it's always a question of how much stuff is going to happen at any of these trade shows, but what did you think in terms of like sort of exciting anything? Was there anything there that you thought was actually worth talking about from something we're actually going to see, something that's really going to affect passengers?
I mean, really, this show is a lot smaller than AIX, and I feel like this year was more incremental updates than it was new products or something revolutionary or even evolutionary.
Say, shrinking a lavatory 3 inches?
Right, yeah. Deal Aviation has the lav that is going on American's refurbished A320 family, so your ex-US Airways 320s and 321s, and they have this new lav that is a mere 31 inches wide, and if you're familiar with the SpaceFlex lav you might find on where do you find those these days?
Those are on the back of JetBlue's A321s, and Lufthansa Group has them flying. British Airways has a SpaceFlex, I believe, flying on its retrofit 320 families.
Yeah. I mean, the moral of the story is
Asia. They're all over Asia too.
It's not great, and
I think that's being very polite.
Yeah, in respect to them, they didn't try to spin it. They said we have a lavatory, just 31 inches wide, and That's that.
Yeah, the sales guy was actually complaining. I was like, so what do you think? He's like, yeah, it's small.
they're smart. There's no other way to spin it. It's a laboratory that takes up several inches less than its competitors, and you can maybe fit inside of it.
Maybe.
Maybe.
If you line up right and sort of...
Some people will simply not fit in it.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the significant point here is there will be a decent number of passengers who do not fit. It's also... One of the interesting things about it is... You know, it's only 3 inches smaller, so you say, what is, you know, why would you do something that only gets you 3 inches of space? But it's that combined with removing an inch of space from n number of rows and putting sort of slimmer seats in, and you actually end up with an extra row of seats on board.
Right, which is a big deal for the airline. For the passengers, you're not going to notice the difference. It's, if you've flown any modern 737, you've basically seen something extremely similar already.
In terms of the legroom and whatnot?
Right, or just the lav.
Or the lav, yeah. So it's similar in size to the now Rockwell Collins, formerly BE Aerospace lab, that's on the 737's MAX, and Delta retrofitted onto its 737-900s. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's out there. A lot of people are flying it. It sucks. I mean, well, in general, these tiny labs, and they suck.
Yeah, they're not great, but they're not intended to be great. They're intended to save space and cram in an extra half or single row, and... That's that.
So it's interesting to me. One of the things I keep sort of thinking to myself as we talk, as we look at these labs getting smaller, is historically it was sort of considered acceptable to have small labs on single aisle airplanes because you were flying 3, 4, maybe 5 hours on board.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing them fly across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yep, flying across the Atlantic. Aerolíneas is Argentina's is using it from all the way from, I think, Puerto Rico. Way down south, that's like a 7+ hour flight. So these things
Copa's putting them on there. Copa's got a set too, and they're using them. I mean, this is an interesting one, right? Copa did a really nice job. They put flatbed seats up front, but on their new MAX, they got a premium economy section that's, you know, solid extra leg room. It's not, you know, only two seats on the instead of three, but it's a nice space. But then also, and I actually don't know what labs they put in, but I would guess they're the smaller ones.
I would guess so, but they've also
taken I'm just saying they're going on long, long flights.
Yeah, they've also taken out the seatback IFE on that and gone to streaming. So you, the premium cabin gets a bit nicer. Economy gets a little less nice.
Well, the ways of the world, right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean I have to like it, but just don't use the bathroom on these things.
What, easy-ish to say on a one-hour flight, much harder to justify on a 6 or 7 hour flight overnight.
Yeah, it's tough.
Right, I wake up, I'm probably going to want to pee in the morning.
Probably, but wait till you get to the gate, maybe.
Yes, but not really always viable. No. So, and there, you know, the real hard part is there's a lot of passengers that just don't fit.
Right.
And I was having this conversation with someone else the other day. My, you know, this is one of two bathrooms usually in the back of the plane. Should we just get to the point where we just put one in?
Nope.
and make it big enough?
Definitely not, because then the line will go all the way to mid-cabin, or if one thing breaks, then you have no lab at all in the back. And it would just be a nightmare. But I don't know. It's a strange situation. I don't like where the industry's trending on that, especially if you're a parent with a small child and you need to change a diaper, or for instance. Sure, there's a flip-down tray to do that, but there's nowhere in that space to put anything else. The sink basin is tiny. And
I think the sink basin is like 6 inches wide at most.
Yeah, it's microscopic, basically. And it's making life more difficult than it needs to be.
For everyone. It's bad for the passengers. It's bad for the crew.
Good for the airlines, bottom line, though.
And good for investors, in theory. So that's actually going to fly. You know, these shows are always interesting because there's a lot of stuff that's, you know, neat or strange or whatever, but almost certainly won't fly. I think that probably will.
Well, we already know it will.
Right. So what are some of the, you know, was there anything else that you saw that we, I can't remember anything else from the show specifically that I think is going to fly that will really affect passengers. What did you see that looked cool but probably won't fly?
Looked cool that probably won't fly. Well, I actually do know something that looks cool and will fly.
Okay.
Is all the IFE vendors have suddenly decided all of a sudden in the last 6 months, oh, Bluetooth audio, yeah, we can totally do that.
That's right. Yeah. So this is, you know, you get on board, you've got your fancy headphones that you use paired with Bluetooth. So think, actually, did you ask about AirPods?
I did. They're just standard Bluetooth.
They are?
Yep.
Because I know in the Apple world, you don't pair them normally.
Yeah, they use they have a W2 or W3 chip in it, which makes it easier to pair with Apple devices, but you can pair with any other Bluetooth device.
So the story here is basically for 2 or 3 years now, when asked about when are we going to see Bluetooth pairing on your IFE system so I can use my personal headset, all of the vendors said it wasn't going to work. There was too much radio interference.
It's impossible.
Yeah, just too much interference, too much in that spectrum. We have Wi-Fi already. People are streaming movies. It's just not going to happen. And now all of a sudden, both Panasonic and
Zodiac,
which are two of the three big boys in this space, said, yep, it's fully supported, fully tested, fully baked. We're installing it. I know the Zodiac guys said they've got 4 airline customers with chipsets delivering starting to their hardware will be delivered to seat manufacturers starting middle of 2019. So expect it, you know, 6 months later on airplanes.
Right. It's not going to be reliable to know when you're going to be able to find that. It's going to be
And we don't know which airlines yet.
Right. It's going to be a very, very probably decade-long run-up to the point where you can reliably expect to have that. But we've gone in a very short time from, no, this isn't possible, to, yeah, of course it's possible, stupid. Why are you even asking us?
Yeah. So that is definitely an interesting one. I agree on that. And it'll be interesting to see. Like, I don't have Bluetooth headphones, so I don't count. And how many people, right? Should they have done that or a lightning port audio? Like,
so they have a couple forms, though. They have the regular 3.5 mil jack, which hasn't gone anywhere. They have Panasonic, I think, is still selling that magnetic thingy that Eddie had rolled out. Now they're doing USB-C audio. So if you have a USB headset and...
Now the magnet's the FiTech one, right? So this is like a weird triangle-shaped sort of Star Trek-looking thing that the headphones are magnetic instead of plugs, so they're sort of MagSafe breakaway, and so you don't break the pins off.
Which is nice, but expensive.
Yeah, and it basically means you have to use their headphones because no one owns those headphones themselves.
Right, and they're doing USB-C audio now, which is a hodgepodge of nonsense. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't see that taking off.
What else uses USB-C audio?
A lot of newer Android phones have done away with the USB, or sorry, the 3.5 mil jack, and they ship with USB-C headphones or adapters, but there's a host of compatibility issues. Some phones...
Like USB-C a disaster for compatibility anyways? It means like 18 different things depending on who you're talking
about. Well, it's an issue of, does the phone have a digital to analog converter, basically?
Right.
If it doesn't, maybe the dongle does, but a dongle from a Pixel won't work on an HTC and the other way around because they have different specs, and you just truly never know. If you plug USB headsets into a thing, it will work with another thing.
It's also probably some DRM there, right? That's why you can't just plug the USB cable, like the Lightning USB charger, into your iPhone and transmit the video across.
Yeah, it's a hot mess right now.
So, all right. So, what's not going to fly?
What's not going to fly? I hope charge to charge doesn't fly.
So this is a product introduced by IFPL?
Yes.
They're one of the sort of large, well, not large, but they're probably second place in terms of providing power to the seat on airplanes.
By second place, we mean up to and including 9% of the market.
Yeah, so the leader in the market is a company called Astronics. They are known for the M-Power brand, and they cover something like 90% of the plugs that you'll find on planes. So everybody else playing around in this space is a bit player in some way or another. And for a little while, it meant that Astronics sort of stopped innovating. Fortunately, that's changed, and they're innovating again, which is good. They had some interesting stuff on display that I think we'll get to in a minute. But IFPL, who's sort of in the second place or player in this space, showed off their charge-to-charge program, which is basically a fun branding phrase for they want to make it easier for airlines to make it power a chargeable item, an ancillary fee. They want to make it easier to sell you electricity on board as opposed to just giving you the USB port.
Right. And it's a bit over-engineered, overly complicated in that it can be integrated into the booking flow. So you can check a box, pay $3 or whatever for power. It loads a token into the app on your phone, which when you plug it into the USB port on board, it interrogates your app, says, okay, you've paid. I'm going to turn on the DC current. And there you go.
Is it only their proprietary app, or can they integrate it into the airline app at least?
It's an API thing. Okay. I guess you can. They can integrate it into any airline. Or if you didn't SDK. Do that, you can. It will prompt you, I guess, browser-based. I don't really know how fully baked this is, but it will display an ad. And after you watch the ad, you will get your power.
So I would like – that's an interesting one, because I can't imagine an advertiser is going to pay the full dollar.
No. But the thing here is that their argument – is sure, it may not be great from a passenger standpoint, but it may encourage airlines that would not have gone through the expense of installing power to do it and try to get some revenue out of it.
Yeah, but
no.
Right, and then we're paying for power. So Scoot Southeast Asia does have a pay for power program.
It's inelegant, but it works.
You ask the flight attendant, you pay the flight attendant, they swipe your card on their little point of sale machine, and then they go back to the galley. And they tap a couple buttons, and your port turns on. I actually did it on a quick flight I was on a couple years ago, was chatting with the flight attendant and did it to see how well it worked.
Were they surprised? Like, oh, no one's ever asked us this before.
I was like, hey, can you show me how it works? Because I was sitting, I had upgraded myself to Biz, so mine was free. But so, it also gave, it was also much less crowded and less chaotic up front, so it was easier to have that conversation with the flight attendant. But they showed me how it worked. It's pretty straightforward, right? There's that like LCD screen in the galley area that controls or displays information on like where the call button is on or how much water's in the toilets or what temperature the aircon is set for. And one of the options is power for the seats.
Right. So this is something airlines have been able to do for many years, but Scoot has been and remains the sole airline in the world that I know of to actually do this.
And somehow IFPL thinks this is going to grow. I would agree with you. I don't think this flies.
No, I hope it doesn't, but I could see their use case for it, but there's just too many moving parts.
So the part I struggle with is, even if the airline agrees to invest the cash to put the hardware on board, which is not cheap, but, also not incredibly expensive. It's cheaper than IFE, for example. The extra cost of building and managing this payment process versus just doing it seems like it would be a detraction from the general idea.
Yeah, it's a novel idea, but it's just too complicated. Move on to the next thing.
Yeah. So let's talk about smart bins.
Smart bins. This was pretty cool.
I really thought it was cool, and I posted a video earlier. I'll see if I can remember to link to it. This is basically a system where, again, from Astronics, or not again, this is one of the Astronics things that I thought was pretty cool that I thought we'd talk about. The idea is there's a sensor that gets installed in the overhead bin.
Very small sensor.
Super small, like so it blends into the hinges almost. And it's also super out of the way. So it's not wired into the aircraft at all, so it doesn't need all this sort of needs some certification stuff, but not this super intensive stuff.
Runs off AA batteries even.
Yeah, for 18 months they said, which is kind of crazy. And what they are trying to do is basically it detects when you put stuff in the bin. So there's two or three use cases they described for us. One is if you leave something behind, like an iPad or a small bag in the back, the flight attendants should know pretty quickly that there's still something on board because of the way it works. It can tell not only if there's something in the bin, but how big it is. It's basically like a depth sensor.
Right.
It detects how far away stuff is.
The demo filled up a little graph that actually showed you how, I guess, high stacked any given part of the bin was. And it was very accurate, actually.
The concept there is, there's a few things. So one is if it wirelessly transmits to a hub, which can even transmit off the plane to the gate agent can track how full the bins are and let people go until the bins are so full that it actually needs to get cut off. And the idea there is you don't stop people too early, but you also don't wait too late.
Right. And you can't just use the raw data there. You still need some predictive analytics because you might have 40 people lined up in the jet bridge. And by the time someone just scanning the boarding pass gets onto the aircraft, it's several minutes later.
Sure. But it's one of the use cases.
Right.
Another one is forgotten items. Don't want people to forget their things, yada, yada, yada. Another one, though, that this is actually where I think the value of it is and doesn't require the depth sensor part, just the little battery module, is the sort of battery chunk and circuitry there monitors temperature, pressure, humidity, and can also monitor other sort of atmospheric things. And so we asked about, you know, temperature in the bins and who cares, and the person doing the demo with us suggested, like, you know, if it gets too hot, your chocolates from duty free would melt. I don't know how or why anyone would control for that.
Well, but you do in that case.
Right, like we open it.
I don't know. Better? Great, I know my chocolate's melting. Okay.
But the part of it that I thought was really cool is the idea that that sensor can also detect things like off-gassing lithium-ion batteries.
Which is a much, much more useful use case than my chocolate is getting warm.
Right, so basically, it's a super fancy smoke detector, right?
Yeah, and the idea there is if you're able to catch the gas from a ruptured lithium-ion battery, which they say leads usually about
6 minutes,
5 or 6 minutes before the actual fire, you can stop the fire before it happens rather than putting out a fire after it has started.
Yeah, so if you have 5 or 6 minutes to react to what's about to be a fire on board, that's good news. So that's actually a legit use case and I think could be really interesting.
I think this is one of the first Internet of Things applications on an aircraft that actually kind of I don't hate.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting. It's going to be, I don't know, we'll have to see how they market it. If I was them, I would be all about the we can detect battery fires before they happen thing.
Right. But then an airline turns around and says, how do I make money off of that?
If I can't, by not diverting.
Yeah, but how often does that actually happen?
More than it should.
More than it should, but not enough where I think they're going to buy this thing fleet-wide. It did, but...
And, of course, that was not in the bin. That was a guy who reclined his seat and then crushed
it again. Yeah, that happens too much.
So the bins are interesting. The other thing that Astronics had on display was Li-Fi.
Yeah, this truly falls under the category of cool stuff that you'll never actually see.
And this is basically Wi-Fi that runs across light instead of radio signals. The guy described it to us as, think of it as just really, really fast Morse code.
Right.
But the next chipset, which is due out, I think, later next year, will support 11 gigabits per second of data speed.
That's a very fast flashing light.
Yes. I don't know. I don't think it will be an in-cabin thing.
No, but in this case, it was pretty cool because they had mocked up the light emitter in the passenger service unit, I guess, reading light?
Yeah, the reading light overhead basically was doing the flashing, and you could stare at it as much as you want. You wouldn't see it flicker at all. Even, like, you know, trying to capture it in a slow-mo camera or whatever didn't capture it.
No. Nope.
But it was transmitting data at 25 to 30 megabits per second.
20 to 40, and it truly worked. If you held your hand over the light, the video stopped.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So
it has one fatal flaw, though.
What's that?
What if I turn the light off?
Exactly. So that was a demo that shows well in the conference hall, right? And also, like, it did it with all the other lights of a conference hall around it.
Right.
But they acknowledge that probably would not be the actual implementation. They can do it with infrared. They can do it with some other.
They did have some cool hypothetical applications for it, though. Like loading video content onto an aircraft is a hideous bitch of a process. You basically get a guy physically on the airplane, plug a thing in, and it loads for however long it takes to upload up to a terabyte of data these days. One of their ideas was load on one of these Li-Fi, what do we call them?
Li-Fi.
Li-Fi emitters onto a baggage cart, which they know is going to be sitting next to the aircraft for 20, 30, 40 minutes, and put a little receiver on the side of the aircraft, and boom, your content loading is done. Nothing. No manual labor needed.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. I, you know, I'll put it in the almost certainly will never fly in the cabin and unlikely to fly even in that sort of content loading scenario.
Right.
But maybe?
I can't imagine that loading up a baggage cart with a Li-Fi emitter and then having to get the data onto that baggage loader. It is a worthwhile process. When you could just figure out gigabit Wi-Fi or something for the gate area. It can't be that difficult.
You know, you say that, and I've had that conversation with a few people also. They all say that the Wi-Fi is sort of public Wi-Fi at the gate. managing those hotspots and everything turned out to be surprisingly expensive.
Well, you do private Wi-Fi.
I mean, whatever, but putting in that hardware, putting in the backhaul, putting in a server locally to cache things, it turns out to be surprisingly expensive. Yeah. And maybe that's because the airports are egregious in what they charge, but it still turns out to be surprisingly expensive. Yeah. So, anyway, I would put that in the probably not category for most infrastructure and in the, you've got to be kidding me, for onboard.
Right.
Anything else from the show really catch your eye?
IFE equipment is getting slimmer, sleeker, better looking, but
the new screens,
time marches on.
The new screens were pretty nice.
Yeah, some of them still have issues with glare, unfortunately. Yeah. The Zodiac equipment, while super thin and nice and
light,
has tiny bezels now, still has lots of issues with glare.
Yeah, but that's it's interesting. The bezel thing you say is interesting. They are basically in the same space that they put an 11-inch screen today. They put a 13-inch screen going forward.
Yeah, their original gen models were chunky.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. You know, it's hard for me to get too excited about bigger and bigger screens in economy, given that your face is much closer, or, you know, an inch or two closer. If the screen's 2 inches bigger and my face is 2 inches closer to the seat back, I can't really see left to right.
Yeah. Time to do some split screen and picture in picture. And, they have the user interfaces of these systems is also getting less clunky to the point where it's more usable.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of hidden gestures and tricks that you'll probably never know about and can't take full use of it.
Yeah, like the Panasonic kit for all of the sort of control buttons, you like swipe across the bottom and they light up as soft buttons.
You know, they've had, especially at Delta, Panasonic's hidden the menu for a lot of the functions of the screen, including the passenger service unit, so the reading light and the call button, in the little blue light that turns on by infrared detection. So if you wave your hand over the screen, the little blue light turns on. Then you have to push the blue light, and only then do you get the button for the reading light. Nobody knows that's there. So there's a lot of oddities and gestures and I guess things to figure out that they don't tell you how to do. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a good idea to be doing all of that.
Yeah, all right. You mentioned Delta there. I think we're going to move away from the trade show a little bit and talk about some other news that came up this week, one of which is Delta's had a network outage for a little bit. Was that Wednesday night, Thursday night?
Sure. One of those nights.
So they had a systems outage for a couple hours, and they never really clarified what systems were out, but it seems like it was a lot of them.
A system was out.
Yeah.
A system.
And they ultimately blamed it on a hardware failure.
Again.
Coming after sort of the conversations that every time one of these things happen, the CIO or whatever comes back and is like, yeah, we got to invest in this stuff. The Delta one they talked about, they sort of accelerated their investment in some of the flight attendant software after one of the previous incidents and trying to make things better, faster, and it's expensive and they're spending a lot of money. But I don't know, man. Single point of failure hardware situation seems like a pretty bad place to be.
It's not great. I'm sympathetic to the airlines because every company in the known universe has IT issues. Systems go down, processes get slow, but it becomes so much more visible when airplanes literally stop moving at the airport and stuff can't take off and flights get canceled. It's much more of a dramatic impact when their system goes down for 30 minutes than it is if Walmart's, I don't know, Wi-Fi goes down.
Yeah, well, part of that is it takes a long, long time typically for an airline to recover.
Right.
They're running on such thin sort of margins of error handling that, like, if all the flight attendants are delayed 30 minutes and you're betting on them all being on time to sort of make the flight at the end of the day, you don't have enough spare flight attendants.
Right. A bunch of them time out and then you can't find new ones and then they have to fly them in from Detroit. And then planes are out of position.
And like, so right, it's not like, okay, well, everything just runs 30 minutes late and then we catch up overnight. Like, you do, but there's some people running 2 or 3 days late at that because of something like that.
Right.
It can take a while to loosen back up.
Complex. Any one thing that goes down, if the crew scheduling goes down, flight stop. If the ACAR system goes down, flight stop. If the flight planning system goes down, flight stop. So it's not just one point of failure. It's so many that one thing in the whole giant machine goes down.
Yeah. So sure, some sympathy and empathy there, but still annoying.
I'm sure they're spending many, many millions of dollars to upgrade their systems, which will eventually fail on their own, too.
Exactly.
It's always some stupid reason.
Yay?
Yeah. We'll see who they blame this time.
Austin gets another intercontinental flight?
Yeah. Remember back in the day when we were all excited about Austin getting a BA-789? Who's it this time?
This time I think it's Lufthansa. It's Frankfurt. I assume it's Lufthansa.
Yep.
Maybe it's Condor, but
it's Lufthansa.
Yeah. So service to Frankfurt starting next summer,
yep.
I guess?
Yep.
They also have Norwegian. Don't forget that.
It's not even Eurowings.
Yeah.
It's real Lufthansa.
Well, because it's from Frankfurt, see?
Yeah.
But, speaking of, they're also, Lufthansa's dropping the Dusseldorf-Newark flight by switching it over to be a Eurowings operation.
Which, if you're on the airplane, really, you won't see much of a difference, because it's just a Lufthansa aircraft repainted, I believe.
Yeah.
You might have to pay for IFE, I think. But business class is still just Lufthansa business class.
Yeah, so, I mean, is this sort of like the June situation? It really just doesn't matter because it's all the same anyways.
Well, in certain cases, June is actually better than Air France mainline.
Because they have power?
They have power. Well, if you're flying an Air France 340-300, it's their worst, absolute worst product. IFE from God knows how long ago, no power, nothing. If you're on June, it's the same airplane, but an upgraded IFE and new seats. So
they retrofit the interior.
It's actually better. In this case, it is literally the same plane, just...
they pulled a couple rows of business out.
Just new paint, yeah. It'll still have premium economy. It still has business class and economy. The only difference is the fare family has changed.
Yeah. Some weird quirks about lounge access and a couple other things, too, and how the points credit. But
true.
But yeah, no, it's relatively straightforward. Payne Field? You going to go fly there?
Payne Field's getting some flights. I wish they added some to the East Coast, though. That'd be fantastic. But they finally put out the schedule today.
Well, they put out the list of routes, right? Destinations that each of the three airlines want to fly to.
Routes and frequencies, not an actual schedule.
Yeah, we still don't have a date, and we don't know what times the flights are going to run at. So it's inching closer, but not quite really to the good stuff yet.
Right. So Alaska and United will be using E-175s. Alaska has a ton of routes, so they've focused more on network than frequencies.
Best on the West Coast.
Yep, that's true.
Most West Coast.
Southwest will be the only one of the three actually operating a Boeing aircraft to Everett, and they'll be using 700s to...
for the smallest they fly.
Yeah, that's the smallest they got, but...
I mean, let's be fair, with the Boeing Embraer partnership, theoretically,
it's a little
happening.
Less egregious, yeah.
Right, no one's bringing C-Series in.
Yeah, it's like Emirates is finally stopping to fly Boeing aircraft into...
Toulouse?
Hamburg.
Or Hamburg.
Hamburg. They're getting upgraded to the A380 now.
Yeah, but, when you only have two planes, like large and extra large, it's hard to sometimes...
Got to justify that A380. It's not just a vanity thing.
Indeed.
Or
indeed.
Is it?
You are mad that you're not going to get a Transcon from Payne Field, but United is going to up its Transcon game a little bit, sort of, come January.
Yeah, January 9th, I think.
Is the current filing, the 787-10... finally hit the schedules this weekend.
Yes, so this is the first...
I mean, we sort of knew that this was going to be the route.
Yeah,
but now it's confirmed.
It's always been rumored that Newark is going to be based, is the new base for the 7810, but now we know the first route is over to LAX, I think on the 7th or 9th. It's the 2 o'clock flight out there, I think. It's the first of their 787s with new Polaris seats and premium economy, too.
Yep, and that's... It'll be interesting. That's because all of those planes have premium economy from the get-go. They should be able to actually sell it. Which
yes.
is good news, bad news. You can't just get it as an elite buying economy
actually,
plus.
Actually, it appears they're not actually selling it as premium economy yet. So they just appear as blocked economy seats.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you'll be able to pick that out, because oddly, they weren't even selling economy plus when I looked. So
it's the weekend. I mean, we're recording this on, Saturday afternoon? So schedules run. They do all their update stuff over the weekends, and it takes a little while for everything to process through it. Usually... by late Sunday or early Monday, things kind of finish. There's a lot of batch jobs that run. So we'll have to see midweek what really it looks like. But it'll be interesting to see if they start selling premium economy or not. I could see them not selling premium economy yet on that route, just in case they have to swap.
Yeah. It's January 7th. It's a late flight. It's the 6 o'clock flight.
Exciting.
Yeah, but they're not selling at this time. Basic economy is $210 one way. First class, which I guess is Polaris, is $1,249.
Oh, thanks, JetBlue Mint.
Yeah, it's, one way that came down quite a bit.
Yeah.
But rows 20 through 22 should be premium economy, so you got three rows.
20, 21, 22, yeah, that sounds right. Three rows, 232?
No, it should be... Uh-oh, I just lost it.
Yeah, because it's...
Yeah, 232.
Because it's 343 otherwise.
Yep, 232.
Or no, 333, I'm sorry, it's a 787. So...
Yeah, 232, 232, and then 333 down back.
Yeah. JetBlue brought humanity back to business class travel, or at least brought cheaper fares to business class travel, and now they want to play the basic economy game.
Yeah.
I don't understand this at all. I really don't. So JetBlue, what, like 2-3 years ago, launched their Fair Families thing where they took away the free checked bag.
Blue Flex.
And they were relatively late to the game in charging for that checked bag. And,
Just went up again and sparked everyone else up.
Right. They also led the $25 to $30 shift, and everybody else raised their $5 too. What's interesting to me about this is they were late to that game because, you know, they were trying to stay nice, and investors punished them and forced the CEO out and a lot of other things. But that happened a few years ago, and things were sort of cruising along, and they've been saying for a while that, like, yeah, our Fair Families are doing fine. Like, we're getting what we want out of them. We're getting that incremental revenue that we thought we'd get. And now Joanna Garrity's letter, which her letter to the crew members, they also published online, I guess, to preempt it getting leaked, basically says our Fair Families aren't working as well as we wanted.
Even though they just upped all of the fees across the board for change and cancel.
And which is, say, the Blue Flex particularly should have called out, which was their sort of top fare, which made wasn't like free changes, but it was easier changes. Is that right? Or maybe it was free. I don't know.
I don't know.
More flexibility, a couple more points, but like you still didn't get any extra space on board.
Right.
So that wasn't selling very well. You got an extra bag. You got two bags instead of one, which apparently wasn't very compelling either.
No, because those who need flexibility probably aren't traveling with check bags anyway.
Or on JetBlue in many cases because of their unreliable operations. But, you know, it was real interesting to see, like, that wasn't compelling for them to sell. But yet somehow, you know, an airline that prides itself on delivering better service, right, free snacks and drinks and all these things, also wants to sort of pick up the ultra-low fare-seeking passenger as opposed to the passenger who is willing to pay that fare premium to get the premium product.
Right. So they said they're not going to restrict your carry-on, which is something Delta and now American do not do.
Or right. United? Only United does.
Only United does.
American switched that off.
Yep. Just a couple weeks ago. They said they're most likely going to do something along the lines of seat assignment and probably no change in cancellation. But their base fare, what was it, Blue fare, it's a $200 change or cancel fee outright. So, I mean, odds are you're probably not getting any value out of that anyway. So they're already there, really.
Yeah, when the change fees, I mean, so you don't get advanced seat assignment, you have to board last.
That's it. I mean, if you, honestly, you're probably boarding in the last group. I guess JetBlue just started doing groups anyway. If you're not elite or sitting, did they still do it by row? Or how do they do it?
They're Wilma-ish, I think. Yeah. So that's window, middle, aisle, sort of back to front, and sort of like a chevron moving forward.
Yeah. So they're really only going to be able to do paid seat assignment, I guess.
But they also do Mosaic first and then even more space after that. So they have two sort of elite groups.
Right.
And Mint goes with the Mosaics first on those flights.
Yeah, just calling it basic economy, I don't think was a wise move because it's not going to be truly basic.
She sort of tried to go after that in the message saying it's not, you know, we're not going to be call it basic. We're still working on it. I'm calling it light blue. But yeah, I don't know why you would even bring up that you're targeting this market as opposed to talking about we want to drop some fares. Like what?
They framed it completely wrong.
I think they did a bad job of positioning it.
Should have just said we're looking to. How do you message this?
I don't know, but we're gonna have fares that don't come with advanced seat assignment, and that's gonna be a differentiator. I don't know. The whole thing is stupid. I guess the real question here is, do they not come with it, but it's chargeable? Is there a different way to do it? I don't know. To me, the surprise is they haven't made even more space a premium economy product.
Yeah, they are one of the few airlines these days in the U.S. that doesn't do a free drink in premium economy or in extra legroom economy, nor does United. But both American and Delta do. That would be an easy toss in there for added value. They tinkered with the idea of offering power in extra legroom seats back in the day and not
on some of their A320 new deliveries. But now that, I mean, if this retrofit ever really happens, that'll be on all seats.
Right. So that's a moot point.
You know, I guess my point is if Blue Flex isn't driving that incremental revenue they want, and they want to get the $100 to $150 per ticket out of those seats,
add some perks.
Why not call it, you know, Blue Leg or whatever? I don't know, Blue Space. And make it a bundle that includes even more space.
Right. And this is something
they can still sell it separately, but one of the real interesting things is to me, Delta started selling its Comfort Plus as premium economy in the GDS solutions. Right. So now if you search for, you know, New York to Los Angeles and you're like, God, you know, I've done this so many times, I really hate flying in
the tight squeeze. I want premium economy instead. Delta's the airline that shows up.
Don't encourage that, though. That's bad behavior.
I think it's bad behavior, but extra legroom, if they also throw in a meal and or the free drink, probably and. It's got to have the meal and the free drink.
Yeah, which they do on Transcon.
Delta does.
Delta does free drinks and free meal on most Transcon, as does American.
American and United, I think, does too.
United does not do free drinks.
Not free drinks, just free meal and E+.
Yep.
And 1Ks get the free drinks, so. But anyway, yeah, they... I just feel like if they really want to have that product that gets the extra $100 to $150, I almost feel like they could sell it that way and do a lot better than what they're doing now for marketing there. Even more speed, even more space, whatever.
Right. Even more space is literally just right now space plus early boarding. That's it.
Yeah. I think they could, and I hate saying this because I like not paying more for things. I think they could charge more for it if they throw a free drink in and made it a bundle.
Yeah.
And
or give away one of those little tapas boxes or whatever their revamp food is.
Yeah.
Which they've actually expanded greatly.
Yeah, they have. I didn't realize it actually had just started. I saw it on the map the other day and had a snack coming home from Vegas. Vegas Boston had it. And I was like, oh, this is nice. And like it's all over the Caribbean now. There's a lot of options. And then I realized, like, and then a week later, they put out a press release saying, oh, we did that thing the other day.
Yeah, it took them years to get to the point where they finally started expanding that program.
Yeah, well, they switched catering companies.
Yeah, so it's about time. More than just blue chips.
Yeah. But they still have the blue chips.
Yes, they sure do. But the snack mix is rest in peace forever.
You still are obsessed with the Dorito snack mix, aren't you?
I love that Dorito snack mix, but long gone.
Now you're Team Goldfish or Team Cheez-Its?
Cheez-Its.
Okay, so you're happy now?
Yep.
Sort of mentioned the United 1K thing earlier. United changed the qualifications to get to 1K starting in 2019. They up the price, right, because there's the EQD dollar component, whatever. It's going to be $15,000 instead of $12,000. Any thoughts on that?
Nope. This is out of my league. This is your department. It sounds like more spend. That's as much as I can tell you.
Anything else exciting happening? No, we went flying.
Oh, we did go flying in a little, what was it?
Archer?
Archer? Piper Archer. Yeah, that was it. Like a 36-year-old Piper Archer out of... Nashua, New Hampshire.
Yeah, that was exciting. Thank you, Corey. This weekend took us up. We went and sort of did a loop over southern New Hampshire, saw the seacoast, saw... Actually, it's interesting. You can see the Boston skyline once you get up to about 1,500 feet. So that was pretty cool on a clear day.
1,500?
Yeah, what did I say?
Did you say 15,000?
No, 1,500 feet.
Oh. Yeah, we did not get to 15,000.
No, well, certainly not with my door not fully closed.
Yeah, at some point I had to tap him on the shoulder. I'm like, don't lean on that door too hard because I'm pretty sure you didn't close it.
Yeah, I closed it halfway through the flight.
Yeah, so we got up to, at the highest point...
4,500?
Yeah, we got up to 4,400
yeah.
On the way back.
We went up, so we flew up the seacoast up to Lake Winnipesaukee.
Nice pronunciation.
And then followed I-93 back south out of the mountains back down to... Nashua, flew over the airport at Manchester, which is why we had to get up above 4,000.
Right.
ATC gave us a 3,500-foot floor because we were crossing the final approach.
Pretty much right over, yeah.
Saw Southwest 737 land.
Nice.
And then just dropped back down into the airport. There was traffic out there today. It was busy.
Yeah, well, it was an absolutely gorgeous day.
Yeah. So, I said it before and I'll say it again, I love flying, but flying in a small plane where you can like sort of see out the front of the plane and look out the windows easily and talk to the pilot and really understand what's going on, very cool experience.
Yeah, that was by far the smallest aircraft I had ever been into.
Yeah.
By far. I think the next smallest I've ever been in was a BN Islander, which is cool, but this is single engine piston, which is a whole other thing. Super fun.
Anyway. Alrighty. Jason, we can find you on the Twitters at Airline Flyer.
Yep.
Do you do anything else on the internet?
Nah.
Okay.
That's it.
So Jason's at Airline Flyer on the internet. We are at Dots Lines or moredotsmorelines.com. You can follow us in those things. Leave us a comment. Leave us a review if you like the podcast. And let us know what you're thinking. You can also give us some money on Patreon and get early access to some of these episodes and, you know, help us buy more beer and more plane tickets because we like that sort of thing. And other than that, we will catch you next week. Safe travels.
Bye-bye.